And that'll do it. The final will be 75-60. And UConn, made for March? Yes, indeed. Made for April? Yes, sir. And in the mix for six, you bet. Now they've got six. The Huskies are six-time national champions. And it's time to celebrate UConn hoops at center court again.
75-60, UConn by 15. 6.9 to go. In it comes to Ethan Morton. He's going to dribble this one out. And the second verse is the same as the first. UConn repeats as national champions. The third team to repeat in the last 50 years. 75-60, the final. The Huskies back-to-back national champions.
It is the year of the repeat. Chiefs repeat, UConn repeats, and pretty impressive performance last night. Welcome to Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Bullitt, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. We will recap that game from last night. I tell you, if you were listening to the show yesterday, we had spot-on analysis. I mean, better than normal. I mean, it was flat-out dead-on, and Connecticut's, their game plan was absolutely sensational. It seems simple in nature, but they executed it to perfection. We'll explain what they did and what we said they were going to do, and they did it, and they pulled it off. Also, the women's national championship game, the ratings are in. We'll share that with you. Pretty impressive stuff. And the Royals are back in action. But first, we throw it to Dusty for some local sports, and there's baseball games with two top 10 ranked teams in the state.
Yeah, a big matchup this afternoon as Beloit is 5-1, and the Kansas Association of Baseball Coaches put them in their poll this week at number 9 in Class 3A, and Clay Center comes into the record of 8-0, and they are ranked number 1 in Class 4A in the KABC poll. So, again, big matchup this afternoon. That doubleheader starts at 4:30 this afternoon in Clay Center. So Trojans and Tigers here this afternoon in baseball action. Softball teams will be playing today as well. Beloit is 6-0. Clay Center Wakefield is 3-3 on the softball side of things. Other baseball today, Russell at Sylvan Lucas Lincoln at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Concordia's at Wamego at 4:30 in both baseball and softball.
Yeah, on the baseball, Clay Center has a kid that's going to be playing Oklahoma State.
Nice.
And they are number 1 in 4A, as you mentioned. And I do know that I have a really good source here, but my son, who plays on the team, not going to play today. He got hurt on Friday, and hopefully he'll be back for Concordia later this week, but looks like he's not going to play tonight because he had a leg injury, but it could have been much worse. It didn't look good. He usually doesn't writhe in pain very often.
Yeah.
He's pretty tough and plays through some pain, which he did during basketball season at times. And I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
When he slid. But looks like he's going to be all right. But that's good for Beloit. Off to a nice start. But they are really, this is by far their toughest test of the year on the road at Clay Center. Clay Center has a very good baseball program. Very, very good. We got track and field and golf as well.
Yeah, Smith Center Redmond relays today at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Smith Center, Beloit, Osborne, St. John's, Tipton, Thunder Ridge, Pike Valley, and Southern Cloud are all competing from the area there. And then golf, Osborne Invitational at 1 o'clock. Osborne Lakeside, Smith Center from the area. Concordia will be at the Chapman Invitational at 1 o'clock this afternoon. And Beloit will be competing at the Minneapolis Invitational at 3 o'clock this afternoon. So if you missed any of that or you're looking for full schedules for spring sports, visit ncksports.com.
So I coach youth basketball, so this tweet kind of got me. So Sean put out there, coach fifth grade boys game yesterday. Coach was complaining about officiating whole game. I finally looked at him and said, dude, it's fifth grade basketball. His response, and you should take it more seriously. Soon after, he received two tees and was thrown out. Fifth grade basketball. Yeah, it's kind of funny, but it isn't funny.
You know, yeah, it's not funny, but yeah, like, take it seriously. Well, you took it too seriously there, buddy.
Yeah.
You're leaving this place.
Yeah, it's insane how serious. I mean, I saw someone get thrown out of a youth football game when my kid was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And went off the field and shouted some bad words. And yeah, that wasn't the finest moment for that person, that's for sure. So sometimes we lose our cool and then really, really end up embarrassing ourselves is what we do. And we've all been there. We probably all embarrass ourselves one way or another, but probably not quite that far in regards to this basketball coach getting two tees and thrown out of a fifth grade game, for crying out loud. Yeah, check yourself.
Yeah.
After a four-game sweep against the White Sox over the weekend, a day off yesterday, the Royals back on the field tonight. Three-game set with the Astros in KC. Royals are 6-4. Astros are 4-7. Cole Reagan's on the hill, 0-1. ERA of 1.46. Christian Javier has been very good. He's allowed just five hits and 11 scoreless innings, so that could be another game where Cole Reagan's doesn't get run support. That's tonight at 6:40 as the Royals try to win their fifth in a row. Okay, so the National Championship men's game last night. Yesterday on this show, I said my biggest concern for Purdue was not defense. It was, can they score? And the reason I said that, and you can go back and play back the tape, was that Klingon can guard Edie one-on-one. And you don't have to leave the three-point shooters because you don't have to double. And if you don't have to leave the three-point shooters, how is Purdue going to score? And I think I even said yesterday, Edie could score 40, and I don't think that's enough. He almost did. He had 37. And he played well. I wouldn't say he played great, but he played well. It's crazy. Guy has 37 points and 10 rebounds. He didn't play great. But for him, he really didn't play great, but he played good. Solid. But Purdue's guards are three-point shooters. They're not drivers. And so what do you do to three-point shooters? You move them off the line. You make them have to put the ball on the floor. You close out on them, make them have to do a sidestep and shoot a three when they're used to catching and shooting. And so what Purdue has done, and I've watched them a handful of times this year and watched them in the tournament, they feasted on Edie being taller than anybody else on the floor, which you're 7'4", you are, and he's usually much taller, you know, 6 inches taller than most guys. The other team's best, tallest guy, 6'8", 6'9", 6'10". And you get it into Edie. So what do the opposing teams have to do?
They just got to guard man-to-man.
No. When Edie is 6 inches taller than the other guy on the other team, what does the defense have to do?
Yeah, well, the other team, yeah, they have to double down.
They have to double. So when they double, Edie can still score against a double because he's still taller than anybody on the other team. Or he kicks it out, and you got wide open shooters all the way around the perimeter. All you got to do is kick it out, swing it, or maybe just kick it out. You knock it down. There wasn't one wide-open three all night long for Purdue last night. Not a single one. And so people are like, well, they're not shooting a three well. They're not even shooting threes! Not shooting it well! They had two three-point attempts in the first half. We don't even know if they're shooting it well. They were one of two. That's 50%. They were shooting a three just fine. They only took two of them. The problem was they couldn't get any looks. They were one for two in the first half. Well, they're struggling at the three-point line. No, they're not. They're struggling to get shots from the three-point line, but they're not struggling making them. They're one out of two, 50%. And then they never did have a good look at three. I mean, the one that they hit the entire game was a shot clock winding down. It was a tough shot by Brandon Smith before halftime. I mean, the game plan was pretty simple. We're going to let Edie get his points. We don't care. Let him have his points. Nobody else is going to get involved. And let's hear the game plan from Dan Hurley straight from the horse's mouth. What was the game plan? Here it is.
Yeah, we didn't want to give up threes. We didn't care if Zach took 25, 28 shots to get 30, 35 points. This whole game plan was like no Smith, no Lawyer, no Gillis, no Jones. Keep that collective group under 18, 20 points as a group. They had no chance to win, no matter how well Zach played.
Absolutely correct. It was a perfect game plan. They executed it. It wasn't really that complicated of a game plan, but they executed it. We have a 7-2 guy. A lot of other teams don't have a 7-2 guy. And I have to admit, Edie did better against Klingon than I thought he would. And they still lost by 15. Because Klingon guarded him, got in some foul trouble. Edie made some really tough shots. I thought he was really cooking early in the game, but nobody else was involved. Edie, at one point, had taken as many shots as the rest of his team combined. And that's exactly what you want. And it doesn't even apply necessarily to just big men. I heard the post-game guys talk about how, and Barkley mentioned it, and I agree with Barkley that, when we played against big men, we were more worried. We're like, you know what? They're getting twos, not threes. So let them have their twos. Uh-huh. He can have 25 twos and score 50. But if the other guys don't even score 20, we can score more than 70. We're good. We got nothing to worry about. And the other thing with Edie, and I've talked about it before, you throw it into Edie, it takes him 6 seconds to make a move.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time you get into your offense, they're not swinging the ball
and moving the ball, and everybody's touching the ball that much. It's more pretty much ISO in the low block, which we saw back in the day with the NBA, and Charles Barkley was one of the kings of that. Catch the ball, dribble it 18 times, pound, 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 post up, no double, see if a double's coming, and then go ahead and try to score one-on-one. And it was kind of boring basketball. But it doesn't apply just to big men. I'll take Barkley's comments just a step further. We've mentioned on this show many times before that, and you can, I'll give you two great examples. Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. They're very similar players, okay? Both all-time greats. They're similar from the standpoint as they were known as scorers. And they were. They were scorers. They weren't distributors necessarily. They could be, but they were known as scorers first. You know, LeBron has been known as a distributor and then a scorer, and he's the all-time leading scorer in NBA history, so he's also a scorer, by the way. I love when people say he's not a scorer. He's the all-time leading scorer in the NBA. Of course he is. But Jordan and Kobe, when Kobe and Jordan scored 50, 60 points, their record wasn't as good percentage-wise. Their winning percentage wasn't as good when those guys went off for a ton of points. Now, why is that? One, they took a lot of shots. Two, that means other guys aren't involved. And when Jordan finally figured it out, and granted, he had to get a Pippen to develop, and having Horace Grant develop, and having some knockdown three-point shooters like a Kerr and a Paxson, and eventually Rodman the second time around, Jordan learned, one, to trust his teammates. He had to learn how to trust his teammates. And once he trusted his teammates, he knew. And how many times did you see Jordan, especially in those two three-peat runs, how many times did you see Jordan not even look to shoot in the first quarter of a game? Like, there was games where he'd just come out and he would dominate. He's like, I got to get us off to a big start. He'd score 15 in the first quarter, and they were off and running, and then he might calm down or he might go for 60. But rarely did he do that when they were winning championships. What he did was he got everybody involved. He might score a couple buckets here and there in the first quarter or the first half. And then when it came down to, you know, crunch time, he could take over the game. But his teammates were already involved. The Bulls were better when Jordan scored 30 instead of 50. The Bulls are better when he scored 30 instead of 60. Kobe Bryant eventually figured it out as well. Took him a while, but he was young. Came into the league when he was straight out of high school. And he figured out once he got Shaq that I don't have to score 60. I don't have to take 35 shots. And when he really learned it was when the Lakers struggled after Shaq left L.A. and Kobe realized I can't do it all by myself. And then they worked out the trade for Pau Gasol. And that's when it really, really clicked for Kobe. Mm-hmm. Like, listen, to win championships, yeah, I got to get my teammates involved early on, establish that, and then I can take charge in the third or fourth quarter when we really need a bucket. That's what the greats do. So the plan against sometimes Kobe and Jordan was, yeah, let them have their points. Let them hog the ball. And then other guys aren't involved. And then when it's time for a big shot, they're not ready. And last night, there really wasn't even open guys. Like with the Jordan-Kobe analogy I'm using, there'd be guys that would be open, and it'd be up to them making shots, and usually they would. And then Kobe and Michael would take over late in games if they had to. Now, last night, they gave Edie his 37 points. They challenged him. He had to earn them, especially in the second half. He had to play virtually the entire game. But there weren't a lot of open shots for other guys. It was very interesting. And we said, and this was spot-on analysis yesterday as well, that the Connecticut guards are better than the Purdue guards, and the Purdue guards have to hit 10 threes or more in order to win. And I talked about how if you don't have to double, Purdue's not going to get great looks. And I said, if you double, I think UConn is quick enough and smart enough to recover and close out anyway. And they rarely doubled. And when they brought a double, it was a hard double. I mean, a hard double. It was no hesitation. How many times do you see teams start to double, but kind of double, but don't double?
Yeah.
No. Just bring it. Be all out. It's kind of like a blitz in football. Just bring it. Don't fake a blitz. Don't hesitate. Just bring it. Even if they know it's coming, bring it. And Purdue was one-dimensional. Matt Painter said after the game, we had to be more balanced, but we took what they gave us, and that was Edie inside. But he said our defense wasn't as good as we would have liked it to be. They got offensive rebounds after we made some really good stops, but then we didn't get the rebound. But UConn was the best team. There's no doubt they're the best team. And now for people to say they're the best team ever, just please stop. They're not the best team ever. Are they one of the best teams ever? Possibly. Did they have one of the most impressive tournament runs? Yes. They did lose three games. They didn't go undefeated like Indiana. Okay. They lost three games. They lost to Kansas, which is still hard to imagine now. Back in Lawrence, early in the year, 69-65. So Kansas fans are like, what? Wow, that seems like a whole nother season ago. But when you look at the rundown of the dominance, and this is why people say they're maybe the best of all time. And I think you can't argue that they lucked out in certain ways. I think my youngest said, well, they didn't play any of the best seeds. And I'm like, well, they did play Purdue in the national championship game. They were number one seed. But, you know, when you look at it, last year they beat Iona by 24, St. Mary's 15, Arkansas 23, didn't have to play KU at one. Arkansas upset KU. Gonzaga, they won by 28. Miami by 13. Miami wasn't a one. San Diego State by 17, and we know, and that was in the championship game. They didn't have to face a one in the Final Four last year. This year, Stetson, 16. Northwestern, they beat by 17. They beat Stetson by 39. Beat San Diego State by 30. Beat Illinois. Now, see, I would say that would be one of the tougher ones, and they had a 30-0 run in that game. Mm-hmm. Won by 25. Alabama was a four seed. So they didn't have to face two juggernauts in the Final Four. And then Purdue was their toughest matchup. Last year and this year, that was their toughest matchup on paper. They finally had to play a one. And they beat them pretty handily there in the second half. You know, I knew Purdue was, I knew it was going to be uphill climb. But I knew Purdue, in my opinion, and I felt this at the time, I thought Purdue was toast at halftime. Because Edie played really well. I thought Purdue played well, and they're down six. I thought Purdue played pretty well in the first half, and they were down six. And the pace of play was in favor of UConn. Hurley wasn't all riled up going into the break when they interviewed him. He was kind of like, oh, we're happy with the way this is going. And I was like, Purdue is dead in the water. The only way they had a chance, in my opinion, was they had to have a run to start the second half. And, of course, that's not what happened. Connecticut instead had the run, and they went on to go up by as many as 18. Tristan Newton was the most outstanding player of the tournament, 20.7 assists, but you could have had Klingon. Cam Spencer, I think, was the glue of this team. He was sensational in the Final Four in the tournament. And I didn't watch UConn a lot during the year, but I read a story, and this is going to be hard to believe for KU fans, but you know who the number one transfer shooting guard in the portal was? Nicholas Timberlake. Do you know who was second on that list, according to an article I read? Cam Spencer.
Yeah.
You talk about opposite spectrums of what they accomplished. Now, would Cam Spencer have done what he did at UConn? Would he have done it at KU? Don't know. Depends on the fit. Obviously, he has a better team around him. And who knows? You know, he goes to KU, still have the injuries. It doesn't matter. If Timberlake goes to UConn, maybe it's a better fit for Timberlake, and it's the same result. I don't know, but that Cam Spencer kid, I mean, he did everything. He rebounded. He tied up people. He got on the floor. He cut. He passes. He handles the ball. He can shoot the three. I mean, just he's an outstanding player. Just a very solid player. And he was a transfer from Rutgers.
Yeah.
And UConn got the freshman of the year of the Big East, Castle. They lost three guys to the pros last year, lost five of the top eight scorers, and all they do is steamroll through the tournament again this year. I still think last year's UConn team might have been better. And people say, what do you mean? They're a four seed or whatever they were. I'm like, no, but see, what you don't understand is UConn had a stretch last year, and I'd have to look it up, but I know they lost like four out of five or something weird like that because they had a lot of injuries. And Klingon was hurt too.
Yeah.
So you sit here and you go, well, UConn, this team's better than last year's team. Well, you're going off of overall record. You're going off of seed. But yet both were dominant in the tournament and won by 13 or more. And you could say this year's team is a little bit more dominant. But you're sitting here saying the best team ever. I don't even know if they're better than last year's UConn team. I really don't. Because they had injuries. That's why they lost some games they lost last year. They had a rash of injuries. I'm pretty sure they lost three in a row in conference play last year because they were just ravaged by injuries. But once they got healthy, we saw what they did, didn't we? And they had three NBA picks. Now, on this team, I would say they have two or three NBA picks, maybe more. Klingon's an NBA pick. Castle, I think, is an NBA pick. Newton's an NBA pick. I think Spencer won't be a pick, but he can be on a roster. And that Samson Johnson kid might be. And there's kids that they have on the bench that eventually be NBA players probably too that we didn't even hardly see. But to sit here and say they're the best ever, I don't even know. First of all, they're probably not even the best UConn team ever, let alone the best team ever. But this is what we do. It's recency. Ooh, they're so dominant. And they were. But as my youngest pointed out, and he's 10, and he gets it better than some of the adults, they didn't have to play many of the top seeds, and they didn't. But I said it's not their fault. It's not their fault.
Yeah.
You play who you play. But they didn't. The whole route, they had to play. I'd have to look up what Miami was last year seed.
They were a nine.
Miami was a nine. Somebody, that was Florida Atlantic was a
somebody
nine.
Somebody was a nine. Yeah, it was Florida Atlantic. Yeah. Miami, but Miami was like a five or six. I looked at that the other day. They were nowhere near.
And San Diego State was a five or a six.
Yeah, San Diego State, I'm pretty sure.
So last year, they didn't have to play a one or a two. I don't even have to. Gonzaga was Gonzaga. No, that probably wouldn't. That would have been the Elite Eight. So KU was the one.
I think Gonzaga was a two.
Maybe they were a two.
Yeah.
So they beat a two last year, and this year they beat a one and a three. They only played 1-1, and they played 1-2 in the span of the 12 games. So I'm not trying to knock UConn what they did. They dominated whoever was in front of them, and it's not their fault that they made it and KU lost in the second round. And by the way, I didn't think Kansas was going to beat UConn last year anyway. And it's not their fault that, you know, North Carolina loses. I mean, it's not their fault that the other ones lost, and then they beat the straight-up number one Purdue and beat them handily.
Yeah, Miami was a five last year, by the way. Here's my thing about that, though, is like you use the thing against them that they didn't have to beat.
Right.
You try to use that. That's what why people sure. say those things, right?
Yeah.
Because they're trying to say something against them.
Right.
Well, they were a four seed and won the whole damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, what do you like? They were not even a one, so they were a four and won all of it. So now you're downgrading what they are as a four seed.
Right.
And they won the whole championship mm-hmm. last year.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is for me is, like, I don't put hardly any credence into any of that anymore. Because the parity in college mm-hmm. basketball right now, 2024 number four seeds are not 1992 number four seeds.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, these teams, like KU is a four seed this year. If they're healthy all year, mm-hmm. they're probably a two or a one.
Or if they're healthy going to the tournament as a four, be tougher than a four.
Yeah, and you're talking about a KU.
Like Connecticut was last year. Connecticut wasn't a four going into a tournament, but because of the injuries and losses, thus they were a four.
And that's where I'm going with that, is like they're a four because they had a couple things happen wrong during the season.
Mm-hmm.
But they're a one if they're healthy.
Right.
If they're completely who they're supposed to be, they're a one.
Yes.
If Kansas is completely who they're supposed to be this year,
they're
a one or a two.
Mm-hmm.
They completely dominated mm-hmm. a number one seed this year at home early in the Big 12 season in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
There was no question. We're going into that game like they're going to bomb Houston this week. And they did exactly that. But then they started having injuries. McCullough didn't play.
They beat UConn. They beat Tennessee, who's the Elite Eight. They beat UConn, and they beat Houston by 20 or whatever it was at KU.
And I just, when people start talking about those kind of things in 2023, 24, whatever year it is, I don't even entertain it. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just like, the path is the path. Who cares how you got there?
Right.
You won a national championship.
Right.
And I just think it's funny that they'll say that they didn't have a tough path. Well, they were a number four seed and should have had a tougher path than they did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got lucky that KU got beat by Arkansas, and you didn't have to play a number one seed there, but you did still have to play the two, I think, to get to the Final Four,
mm-hmm.
and you were a four seed yourself. And like, all that stuff just drives me nuts when mm-hmm. people try to downgrade somebody's championship.
Well, see,
they
this,
did it with the Nuggets last year in the NBA. It's like, no, they played the teams that were ahead of them and dominated.
And I'm with you, because
Connecticut dominated. These were not close games.
Right. I'm with you. I'm presenting both sides of the coin, by the way. I'm not telling anybody which way I believe. I believe that, I'll tell you what I believe. I believe UConn is obviously it's legitimate. I think UConn was outstanding, and I don't think it mattered who they played. I don't care if it was they had to play ones and twos and threes and fours and the high seed all the way through. I don't think it would have mattered. I truly don't. I think they were that better than everybody else, and they just beat. I mean, everybody talked about how Purdue and UConn were two best teams all year long, and they beat them by 15 and absolutely shut them down defensively.
Yeah.
It couldn't even get 3-point shots off, let alone make them. So UConn is legitimate. Where my argument comes in, and it goes back to tying what you said, ironically in a different way, is I get tired of, you just mentioned what you get tired of. I get tired of, as soon as somebody wins something, we immediately have to we can't just settle with, they're the best this year.
Yes.
We have to start saying, compare them to other eras or other champions, And then we start saying, well, they're clearly better. They're clearly better than last year's UConn team. And that's like, now there's a shot against UConn that you just were explaining. UConn was a four seed. People are like, well, UConn, well, of course UConn this was better because they're a one and they dominated. And yeah, last year UConn's team dominated, but they were a four. But this year's team didn't have the whole bunch of injuries at the same time as last year's team. Like, if you put that starting five versus this starting five, I think it'd be one amazing game. I'm not going to tell you for sure who would win, but I don't even think you can actually just flat out say, well, this UConn team is the best team ever. No. I don't even know if it's better than last year's championship team. I don't know if it's better than all of their championship teams, because now they have six championships in six tries. They're 6-0 in the national championship game. They have six titles in the last 25 years, okay? And there's a lot of years they didn't even make the tournament. But when they make it, they do it.
Yeah.
In regards to seeding and stuff, the Kemba Walker team was the one that benefited the most of I want to say a cakewalk, but they just got hot. They got hot at the end. They won like five games in 5 days, Big East tournament. They got hot, and then all the top favorites got knocked out. They got upset. And you can't tell me that UConn team that year was the best team in America. They did benefit.
Sure, yeah.
They did benefit from some of the big boys getting knocked off and upset, and they took advantage of it. What I'm happy about this year, because some people said UConn last year, well, they lucked out a little bit because there's no other one. There's no ones here and no juggernaut. And these teams got knocked off. This year, they can't say that about this UConn team. They beat Illinois, who was a top 10 team, they had a 30-0 run against them, for crying out loud. They destroyed San Diego State, a team they met in the championship a year ago, by 30. And and Alabama was the toughest game they had. And then they just, another gear, 56-56, 8-0 run, game over. And then Purdue, like I said, on a normal year, Purdue might be your national champion, but because UConn was so good and so dominant. So I'm with you. Let's not degrade what they did because of the path they had to take. They played everybody that kept winning, and they kept destroying everybody that kept winning. And it's not their fault the other teams didn't win. They just simply did what they're supposed to do. I've talked about this before, too. When people talk about, well, how weak the schedule is. Okay, first of all, it's not the Royals don't control the schedule, if you're talking about the Royals' schedule, or if you're talking about the Chiefs' schedule. The Chiefs and the Royals don't control the schedule, okay? Yeah. And the athletic directors in high school control the schedule. So you say, well, that's pretty soft. Well, guess what? You'll eventually be exposed. If your schedule's really, really soft, you will be exposed. But you just have to play whoever's next on your schedule. That's as simple as that. As players, as coaches, you just focus on the next date, the next opponent, you get the scout. And it's Bill Murray's son, by the way, comedian Bill Murray, actor, his son was the one that had the scout on this one. It was brilliant. Just let Edie have his stuff. We're not going to double. And Lawyer and Smith are not going to beat us off the dribble. And Jones is not, and him getting foul trouble, I think, hurt Purdue, no doubt, last night. But UConn was clearly the better team, despite Edie having 37 points on 15 of 25 from the floor, 10 rebounds. As Dan Hurley said, we were okay if he took 35 shots. We didn't care. Like, let him have his points.
Yeah.
We're going to hold the rest of the guys to under 20. Guess what? That's what they did. Lawyer didn't even score. Okay, and he played great in the Final Four. Braden Smith had 9 in the first half, couldn't do anything second half. They took just 7 attempts from beyond the arc. They made one. And by the way, the 7 three-point attempts, and this is a game now in basketball. At every level, it's about the three-pointer. Purdue's 7 three-point attempts was the fewest by a team in a title game since, ironically, UConn in 1999 when they won their first title. It's the fewest by any team in the entire tournament this year. And the one made three-point shot tied for the fewest in a title game. And we're in 2024, not when the three-point line was just established. Okay? It is pretty amazing stuff. Purdue entered the game second in the country in shooting, 41% from three, only attempted 7. UConn finished the year 37-3. Their last loss was to Creighton by 19 points, I believe it was, in Omaha. They lost to KU. It was the only non-con game that they lost this year, and that was in Lawrence. It's never easy to win an outfield house, as everybody knows. But UConn was such a good, balanced team that you could argue easily that Klingon, Spencer, Newton, even Castle, you could have picked any one of those four to beat MOP.
Mm-hmm.
You easily could, and nobody would have argued with you. And that shows how great this team was. Here's Danny Hurley on building this year's championship team for UConn.
We recruit really talented NBA players that are willing to not make it about themselves and to be a part of a winning group and to go for all the championships. And while doing that, their draft stock still is really, really high. So we both win. UConn wins and the players win.
Yeah, no question. Back-to-back titles. And then Danny Hurley went one step further.
Yo, UConn's been running for the last 25, 30 years. UConn's been running college basketball. And I see all the former champs over there. And we run. We've been running college basketball the last 30 years. Let's go.
Now, when I first heard that comment, I thought, okay, this is, he's pretty arrogant, you know, a little bit. And then I got to thinking, I'm like, he's right.
Yeah.
I mean,
not
six titles.
Speaking lies here.
No, he's right. Six titles in 25 years, and they haven't lost a title game. Now, there's been years they don't even make the tournament. They've had some stretches, not so good. But when they get there, make their run, they get it done. You want to talk how spoiled UConn fans are? The UConn women are 11-1 in national championship games, and the UConn men are 6-0. So 17 titles and 18 tries.
Yeah, that's insane.
That is insane.
Yeah.
That is absolutely ludicrous. Looks like the commercial, right? It's insane what they were able to do. And how spoiled are you as a UConn fan? Oh, no, your women only made it to the Final Four.
Yeah.
And you're screaming about a legal screen that was an illegal screen. But it is the most, this is the most dominant run through a tournament that I've seen since, I don't know, UNLV. I mean, for me, UNLV, when they won the title and then didn't go back-to-back, and they should have, but Duke, you know, caught them off guard. I think UNLV was cocky and confident because they had blown out UNLV by 30 in the national semis the year before, or the national, actually, it was the national championship game, by 30. UNLV was one win away from perfection, couldn't get it done. They're one win away from going back-to-back. And that's why I was like, the only thing that holds me back with UConn yesterday was, you know, sometimes weird things happen when you're one win away from getting something accomplished. But as you said, you had your chances earlier, but now I don't think it's going to happen. And I felt like the matchup was really good for UConn, and they took advantage of it. Where does UConn rank? I don't know. I honestly don't really care. They won the national championship. But I will say this. I can't think of a more dominant run in the tournament. And you talk about parity, but there was no parity here. That was dominance.
It was, yeah.
In a parity-filled college basketball landscape where NC State can load up on transfers and make the Final Four, where Alabama can lose three of their four coaches and lose some of their top scorers and just reload and get to the Final Four. It is amazing how dominant they were, and they did not play all these low seeds all the way through, as some people may try to tell you. It's the most dominant run I can think of in the NCAA men's tournament since, and I'm probably maybe forgetting something, but I'm talking in regards to winning it. You can't say you're dominant and you lost in the Final Four. Kentucky was pretty dominant, but they lost in the Final Four, and they were undefeated that year until that loss. Kansas was dominant, lost in the Sweet 16. No. You have to win it all to be dominant. I'm talking a dominant run all the way through. You know, North Carolina, I think, won every game by double digits when Sean May and Roy Williams, remember Sean May, and I think Rum and Felton, they won every game by double digits. I didn't think they were as dominant as this team at all because they didn't win games by 30 or have 30-0 runs or anything like that, which is unheard of. But the last team I can think of that won a national championship that was dominant and made a dominant run through the season and then on top of that made a dominant run through the tournament would be UNLV in 1990. They won the national championship by 30.
Yeah, and I don't think you're going to find a whole lot that are more dominant than that. Yeah. I still always go back to that 2018 Villanova team, though, because nobody touched them.
Yeah.
And they won every game by 12 or more, and they were playing teams, if you want to talk about and complain about UConn not playing the teams, they played 16-9, 5-3, 1-3. Like, they were playing ones and three. They were playing the seeds that they probably should have been playing when they made their run. And so,
did they beat teams by 30?
They early in the tournament did, and then they won by 17 over a 3-seed Michigan in the championship and won by 16 over a number 1-seed Kansas.
Yeah, I saw that one in person.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like they were dominant against teams that were seeded very, very high in that tournament.
Yeah.
And that's, for some reason, that's the one that I'm not saying you're wrong, and I'm right.
I'm just saying the one
that always comes to my mind is that one because nobody touched them that year.
See, to me, I never thought of them as dominant, but that does fit dominant.
And it's not.
I didn't think of them as dominant because they shut ton of threes.
Yeah.
Like this team, UConn had
a different
7-2.
Style. Yeah. No
they
doubt.
They had 3-point shooters. They had drivers. They were, and I don't know how much UNLV trailed, but this is an amazing stat. They've trailed all of 53 seconds in the second half in the last 12 tournament games.
Yeah.
I'm guessing Villanova probably was trailing at some point in the second half, but maybe they didn't. But just because I don't remember them as dominant doesn't mean they weren't dominant. That's a good point you bring up. But I look at UNLV, how they intimidated people. Like, I don't think Villanova didn't intimidate people.
No, I think
UConn does. So
it's definitely a different style of how they did it.
But they were dominant.
Nobody touched them in that tournament.
You're right. but UConn, then you add in the fact that they were the hunted. They were the defending champion.
Absolutely.
They
that
were
adds
top
to
five
it for
or
sure.
ten. That adds
yeah,
to it as
absolutely
well.
Absolutely.
They weren't
does.
Preseason number one, but they were top five or top ten to start the year.
Yeah, and you know, I'm just giving an example.
Sure.
And I don't want to take away from UConn because this is so difficult to do it back to back. And everybody's on your back. Like, you have the biggest target.
Absolutely.
Ask anybody that's tried to do it and hasn't been able to succeed in doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Since Florida in 06 and 07, since the Patriots in 03 and 04, ask the Chiefs, you know?
Right.
It's like, it's not easy to do this, and it doesn't happen very often, and the target was squarely on their back, and nobody, I don't think hardly anybody really wanted to believe in them, but they had to believe in them.
And then
they went out and did it. They were dominant, no question.
It was impressive, no doubt. So Dan Hurley has something in common now with his big brother, other than the Hurley name, because Bobby Hurley, who I despised, who was the point guard for Duke's national title from 91 and 92. Now, keep in mind, if they don't upset UNLV in 91, they don't go back-to-back.
Exactly.
And UNLV would have. Instead, they go back-to-back to beat Michigan the Fab Five in 92. So now Danny Hurley has back-to-back titles. So two boys in the Hurley family, brothers, both have back-to-back titles. One as a player, one as a coach. So you talk about UConn fans being spoiled. How about the Hurley family? Of course, their dad was an amazing coach in high school. And now you see what, you know, Bobby's a decent coach. He's at Arizona State, but Danny's just going nuts. Which now, of course, Kentucky, supposedly the opening will be there. Calipari's going to Arkansas. And the Kentucky fans are like, well, Hurley's got to come to Kentucky. You know, UConn doesn't get enough credit. I mean, Hurley said last week, Danny Hurley said on a podcast, he said, you know, we've done all this all year long. We've been great all year long. We've been tremendous all year long. And he said, and if it was Duke, Kentucky, or Kansas, it would lead SportsCenter. And he said, we're just in Little Stores, Connecticut. And a Kentucky fan retweeted that and said, see, this is the reason why he could come to Kentucky is he is the man. I mean, this is the program. But he said that his wife would kill him, basically, that he didn't want to get divorced last night when he was asked about the Kentucky job. He's like, listen, I just moved her closer to family, blah, 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 because I'm just now starting to make money, is what he said.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that was a shot at his wife because she spends it or what. But he really was poo-pooing the fact that he would go to Kentucky. But you know what? Sometimes there's so much money involved, it might be irresistible. But he's going to get a big pay raise. There's no doubt about it after what they did this year.
Yeah, with the
and they could three-peat.
Yeah, the interesting thing about what you're saying there is that's the engine, right? That's not just the worldwide leader doing that. They're in the same state as Connecticut.
It's amazing.
Bristol, Connecticut is where they're at.
It is amazing.
And so that's the machine, right? That's created by not just ESPN, but the whole...
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Blue Bloods are, right? And but UConn should probably have their name in that mix by now.
They've won more titles than Duke now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only, I think, Carolina, UCLA, and there might be one other one. Those are the only ones that have more titles than UConn in basketball.
And that's their problem, is they just started it 25 years ago.
They haven't
been here since the beginning of time, like UCLA and Kansas and Kentucky, winning games for so long.
Could we go ahead and kick out
Duke?
I think when people think Blue Bloods, they think Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina, Kansas, and UCLA. And UCLA hasn't really done anything for a little while, but they were really good there when the Florida years, when they went back-to-back. But Indiana hasn't done much for a long time. Could we just go ahead and kick Indiana to the curb and let UConn automatically have their spot?
I think I have a long time
ago. Me too.
But I don't
Me
know
too.
If everybody's in the same boat or not. But definitely, for sure, it's that point in time now.
Six titles, 25 years. That's a heck of a run. And now they got the back-to-back for the first time.
Yep.
Of course, the women had done back-to-back numerous times, so they're like, big deal. Whoop-de-doo. Speaking of the women, we'll end with this. The women's national championship game, 18.7 million people watched the women's national championship game between Caitlin Clark and Iowa versus South Carolina. 2 years ago, the women's title game had 4.5 million viewers. This year, 18.7. To put this in perspective, the national title game for the women drew a better rating or more people watching than The same, they have about the same number as the Washington, Texas College Football Playoff semifinal this year.
Mm-hmm.
The women's national title game drew more people, had more people watching than the Alabama-Georgia SEC Championship football game this past year. Their rating and the amount of viewers was higher than all but four college football games in 2023. More people watched the women's national championship game between Iowa and South Carolina than any World Series game since Game 7 of the 2019 World Series, every NBA Finals game since Game 5 of the 17 NBA Finals, every Daytona 500 since 2006, and every Masters final round viewership since 2001. Let that sink in for a second. Women's college basketball, as one friend of mine said, nobody cares. You're an idiot. Okay? Sorry, buddy. You're a friend of mine, but I'm going to call it what it is.
That is a crutch because you can't stand that people care.
It's a sexist comment slash you're lazy. It's lazy sexist comment is what it is. 18.7 million people watched the Women's National Championship game. That is better than the Alabama-Georgia SEC Championship football game, better than all but four college football games of 2023, better than every World Series game since Game 7 of the 19 World Series, every NBA Finals game than game since Game 5 of the 17 NBA Finals. It's better than every Daytona 500 for almost two decades. It's better than every Masters final round over the last 23 years. That's insane. That's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge. Now the question, will it continue when Clark goes to WNBA, or does WNBA ratings soar initially, which I think they will, early on? And if Clark is unbelievably dominates, then that'll help it even more. Now, if she goes in and struggles after about one season, I think that'll all wear off. But that's the question for me for the women's game going forward. I think it's a good game to watch. I think, you know, they shoot free throws a lot better than men. They have more fundamental, better shots than the men, although they do struggle making layups. And I think that is part of being lower, not as tall, don't play above the rim. They play below the rim. I get that. But they're fundamentally sound. They're well coached, these teams. They've got some outstanding athletes. But the question is, going forward, much like we talk about men's golf, what happens when Tiger and Phil are completely done or dead and buried? Which I think that's what has to happen before they actually hand the baton to anybody. They got to be both dead and buried because they're still not doing anything. But yet that's what people talk about. Like, why isn't Brooks Koepka? Why isn't all these other guys? Nobody's really taken a baton and run with it, or they haven't been marketed the right way. Now, that's professional sports, so that could last for years. Women's basketball, you know, you might have a lull for a couple of years, and then there's the next Caitlin Clark or the next Jackie Stiles or Lynette Woodard. Or maybe it's Paige Beckers next year, and it's she goes off and has an amazing year, and Juju Watkins, and there's some high school senior that comes in and takes the world by storm and looks like the next Caitlin Clark or shoots like Caitlin Clark or does something unique that nobody else has seen before. But that's my question moving forward. Much like golf, who's going to be the next person to help keep the momentum going? That has not happened in golf, as we've established. Mm-hmm. And then the breakup between them and Liv and having two entities is not good. The ratings are down 20% according to Rory McIlroy. So that's a problem for golf, as we discussed the other day. But for the women's game going forward, who's going to take the baton from Caitlin Clark? Angel Reese is also going to WNBA.
Yeah.
Those are the two most noteworthy, well-known players this year. Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. Okay, the Cardoso girl is an outstanding player at 6'7", but she's not tip-of-the-tongue name. It's Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, and it's in this order. Clark, and then everybody else, and maybe Reese. I mean, that's how it is. So going forward, that's the key for women's basketball to maintain this momentum. Because this is my belief, and I don't want to come across as Mr. Debbie Downer here, or Mrs. Debbie Downer. But my question is going forward. I think women's game will still get good ratings, mm-hmm. but I don't think they're going to come close to this for a while. And here's why. I don't think Caitlin Clark is a generational talent, and I do not think there's going to be a player quite like Caitlin Clark for a while. I'm not saying it won't happen, but what I'm saying is I don't think there's going to be that player that's going to keep these numbers where they are moving forward. I don't think, I'm like, listen, if I were a betting man, I think I'm pretty safe to say there will be less than 18.7 million watching the national championship game next year. I'm going to be willing to bet you that the Elite Eight is going to have a lower rating than this year with Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese. Okay? And if you remember the NBA's ratings went down for a while For a little while, Bird and Magic, when they didn't meet in the finals, the ratings went down for the finals because those were the no. And then Jordan came along, and he basically saved the NBA. Well, Jordan and Magic and Bird saved the NBA, but then Jordan took it to a whole other level. Yeah. But then even when Jordan retired, there was kind of like, oh wow, the Rockets. And you know what? The NBA finals between the Rockets and Knicks were low. The ratings were
low.
That's
why they played the O.J.
That's
chase
why they did O.J.
on
in the middle of
the basketball game instead.
The O.J. got better ratings than the Bronco than going 18 miles per hour on a speed or a freeway. But the ratings went in the toilet for the NBA Finals next 2 years. And then Jordan came back, and then what do you know? Woo, there they are again. Yeah. And then when he retired after that, you at least had the
Lakers. Out, and then you go away out. For a bit,
yeah,
though.
Yeah,
and then
did.
Lakers.
But the Lakers kind of took it from there. They kind of kept it going. And you know, once again, lucky there because they repeated or got a three-peat or whatever, so you continued that dominance, which helps draw somebody to watch a sport, I think, is when there is a dominant team. Like tuning in to see UConn, can they go back-to-back? Tuning in to the Yankees, can they win a third World Series 4 years? Tuning in to see if the Chiefs can three-peat? I think you get more viewers when teams are dominant from that standpoint because you have so many people watching so that you fail. They don't want to see
and, yeah.
That's the reason people sometimes tune in. They want to see the failure of somebody that's got so high, and they want to see him knock down a peg or two because I'm tired of Mahomes and the Chiefs. I'm tired of Danny Hurley and UConn, which, trust me, that's what's going to happen next year. We're tired of it. We're sick of it. We don't have Hurley bragging about how great they've been running college basketball. But the women's game, you don't have to worry about Caitlin Clark anymore. You don't have to worry about Angel Reese. Who's going to be the next player or two that's going to become the face of college basketball? Because as Dawn Staley so accurately pointed out after they won and congratulated Caitlin Clark and talked about the heavy burden on her shoulders, said she's going to take the WNBA to another level as well. I agree with that she will early on because of the interest. Then if she continues to play like she has at this level to the WNBA, there's no doubt it's going to help the WNBA and lift it to another level. And if she goes the first year and gets beat up and it's physical and she gets injury prone like Jackie Stiles ended up happening and she disappears, that's that. Great story. It'll be a 30 for 30 someday. But I don't know who the next people are to take the women's game and keep it where it is because it's star power that drove this thing. And the college women's game has not had star power. You could argue it's never truly had it because it never truly captured America's attention. Jackie Stiles, if she was in today's society, she would have.
Yeah.
But you didn't have all this stuff. Lynette Woodard was before her. She became the first ever Harlem Globetrotter. But you didn't have all the coverage as you would now. Can you imagine if Caitlin Clark was on the Globetrotters right now? Or, suddenly was on she was a 12th person on the USA men's team or something weird like that. Well, we're going to have a woman on the men's team. What? That's a men's team. But whatever. I just don't know how you follow this up is my thing. I hope they can.
The thing with Caitlin Clark is so hard to replicate.
Yes.
Not only because of what she does as far as scoring and the way she plays the game, there's so many deep levels to that. I've been watching women's basketball.
How many coaches will let
you
play like that?
Exactly. I've been watching women's hoops for a long, long time, and I'll tell you right now, a lot of the years I'm more focused and zoned in and concentrated watching a women's championship than I am the men's.
Yeah.
Just depending on what the matchup is on the men's side, I might have more interest in it, right? But the women have always, for probably say 10 to 15 years, probably been more fundamental than what's going on in men's basketball, right? They do the things correctly, but like you said, they're not playing above the rim, and that takes some of that away, right? That takes some of the excitement away of what women's basketball is. But back to the Caitlin Clark thing is like, okay, Juju Watkins, I think, is probably who we're probably going to have to try to latch on to right now. If I was going to give you a name today, and if you asked me, I would say latch on to Juju because she's leading that team as a freshman and might have a couple, three more years here depending on what she wants to do. But you can't latch on to somebody. Here's the problem with like a South Carolina, right, is they're so good as a whole that not one person is always standing out. Like Cardoza stands out obviously because of her stature,
right?
But there's so many team players on that team that can do a lot of things, and South Carolina has built up what's kind of a little dynasty right now in women's basketball. And who can tell me a name of a former South Carolina player? If you're a casual fan, like
Asia
Wilson, like everybody,
that's about the only
exactly
one I can think of.
If you're running into it like everybody else did with Caitlin Clark, name a South Carolina player from this run, and Asia Wilson's the only one that I think anybody would even come up with. I can come up with Aaliyah Boston, and many people can. That's what I'm saying, though.
Right?
What you just said, I forgot about her.
Listen, we know the names of the Iowa players right now because we watched them, but a year from now, next WNBA opening day, in a few months, are we going to remember anybody else who played for Iowa?
Like, I will because I watched him play, but you're casual like what you just said. I forgot about Aliyah Boston, right, who was actually on the broadcast for the national championship on the panel there at ESPN. Is like, that's the problem with it right now. It's like, that's why it's so hard to create that. Yes. Nobody's going to remember Hannah Stolke.
Nope.
In 4 months when Caitlin Clark is with the Indiana Fever.
Right.
And it's there. That's the problem. I'm going to say the problem. That's the issue. Mm-hmm. That's what they have to figure out of how can we continue to keep this going. And you also have to have somebody that's willing to go play at Iowa, to go play at Indiana in women's hoops, to go play at Kansas. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody that might just be that generational talent that says, no, I'm not going to UConn.
Right.
I'm not going to South Carolina right now. And so that's the difficult part of it is I can name a lot of women's basketball players on championship teams going back to probably Sophia Young for Baylor in 2005. Mm-hmm. I'm not normal in that way, though.
Right.
People don't watch women's basketball that way.
No.
And so that this is why they're growing, and this is why Caitlin Clark was so important to what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And if you wonder how important Caitlin Clark is, teams are already selling tickets for their games against the Indiana Fever in the WNBA, and she's not even been drafted number one yet.
Yeah.
What if some?
That's what my youngest said. What happens if Clark isn't the number one pick?
Yeah.
And I said, well, whoever it is as number one pick doesn't take Caitlin Clark. They're an idiot, because even if she doesn't even have a good career, they're going to sell a ton of tickets and sell out.
It's like I saw the Phoenix Mercury had a Twitter post yesterday, and it had the picture selling tickets for their game against the Indiana Fever in Phoenix, and it says the Rook, right, with 22 on a shadow in the back. Like, they know.
Oh, sure.
And so now that's what I'm saying. That's how big of an impact she has that transcends what she did at this level going to the next. And so now you got to sustain that if you're Caitlin Clark, though, too, to keep that for the WNBA.
But
I don't know how
key.
Much it's going to help ratings, but people are definitely going to buy those tickets the first time she comes
around.
She's
going to another league, and she's no longer being college basketball. You know, one thing that helped the women's game for a while there, too, is UConn was dominant, so people tuned in, maybe not necessarily for a player, but they tuned in because they wanted to see UConn lose.
Yeah.
They wanted to see if they could win another title and another title and another title, and they had this long winning streak a few years ago. And people tuned in because they wanted to see them finally lose or see if they keep the winning streak alive. Now, you know, with Caitlin Clark going to WNBA and a few other really good players, but that's the main one, and she's all over commercials, that helps as well. She's been marketed very well, and they'll do the same thing in WNBA, and they're licking their chops right now, as you just pointed out. All these other teams are already promoting when she's going to come to town. She hadn't been drafted yet. But, you know, I don't think South Carolina moves the needle that UConn did, unless South Carolina wins 4 out of 5 or whatever. So you have a dominant team, no doubt. They've won 2 of the last 3 titles. They've lost 1 game last 2 years. They're a very dominant team, but they don't have the brand name UConn quite yet. So you don't have that brand name dominant team, even though they are dominant. South Carolina has been the last few years. And then you also don't have the generational talent, unless Juju Watkins, or like I said, some high school senior takes the world by storm next year. The other problem with Juju Watkins is she's on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Now, Steph Curry is on the West Coast too, so people can say, well, what's the difference? Well, that's a little bit different. NBA, WNBA, so forth and so on. But in regards to college, I think one of the great things about Caitlin Clark was she was Central Time Zone. Mm. Everybody could watch her. You didn't have to stay up way too late. I mean, you know, East Coast would be fine too, I guess. But the West Coast, how many times do we hear, nobody knows how good the Pac-12 is because the games start when I go to bed. So are you going to have, is Juju Watkins going to be the next generational talent where you have to watch her, but you have to stay up past 11 o'clock in Kansas?
Yeah,
probably not.
No.
Probably not. So that's one of the things against Juju Watkins that she has to deal with.
Yep.
So we'll see what happens moving forward, but there's no doubt that the women's game's in good shape now. The question is, what's it going to be like when these great talents, including Clark, are no longer in the game, and they aren't now, starting and moving forward. So there you have it. 10:02 is our time. 47 degrees. This has been the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair.
I'm Elijah at Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Did you know that we sell tires? We also perform alignments and all the other services that go along with them. We handle all the top brands. Extras like road hazard warranty, complimentary tire rotations, and complimentary tire repairs are available for purchase on most tires. Right now, we are offering $80 off when you buy a set of 4. Call or stop by Kiefer Brothers Automotive for fast, friendly tire services today. Find us just south of the courthouse in Beloit or on the web at KieferBrothers.com.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.